Part 17, Chapter 7. True it was that the stockpiles of breathe gas and ammunition had been stripped to the last cartridge. The grass and shrub had been crushed dead for years. A quarter of an acre had been the extent of the breathe gas dump, half an acre the extent of the fuel and ammunition dump, and it was all gone. Angus opened the lock of the compound's main door, and the reserve troops from the attack carrier went sprinting in, covering each other. The place was empty. It had four levels of offices, shops, and hangars. Pumps were running, lights were all on, and it was a jumble of hasty departure. Johnny stood in the corridor outside the recreation area. What a dismal, dank place. Mold was growing on things. Water was dripping down the walls, only kept cleared out by the pumps. What an awful place to try to live, even for a cyclo. He thumbed through sheaves of radio dispatch forms that had been spouting out of a printer. Even the paper was wet in this hot, humid place. They had been monitoring all bands, particularly the pilot band. It was odd to see, "Andy, can you pick up that load of pilgrims in Calcutta?" and "Please bring me another flying suit and some fuel, McAllister." The Scott pilots largely talked cyclo with a jumble of English. It must have looked quite mad to the company employees, huddled here in this remote jungle, not knowing what was really going on, but monitoring every scrap of it. A Russian raced up to him holding a cyclo breathe mask he must have found someplace. It still had the bottle attached and was operating. Johnny sniffed it, and it burnt his nose passages. Let's see. It took about 12 hours for one of the flasks to run out. This was still half full? Quarter full? He shook it to see how much of the breathe gas in liquefied form was still there. The cyclos had left within the last 8 or 9 hours. He hobbled along the corridor, sweat streaming off him. The pumps were running air into the place, but it didn't make it any cooler. The usual cyclo stink. No, worse, for it was mixed up with mold. Bubbles of sound floating in from various parts of the interior levels where his people were still searching. There was a mine phone off its buttons, and he listened at it. Still alive. He could even hear the mine pumps running at the distant tungsten workings. This mine site wasn't as old as most. Probably been moved here from elsewhere in the forest when they found another tungsten deposit. They were mad for tungsten. The view screens in the mine manager's office were on. Johnny looked at the big electric roasting ovens at the mine. They conveyed and roasted ore there. Steam was coming off coils. They must have considered this upset on the planet temporary, for they had gone on mining. He went down the stairs that led to the hangar, the usual cyclo steps, twice the height of human steps. Hard to negotiate with this leg. Well, he was getting better. He'd sure been able to use a blast rifle today. No speed in his arm, but it was improving. The hangar was in the same disarray as the other parts of the interior. It still held vehicles. Angus was poking around in the vast, overlit interior. He had a big crayon in his hand and was putting an X on vehicles he felt couldn't be readily made operational. Two small tanks. Angus had X'd them out. Several flying mine platforms. No X's. So, okay. Several flatbeds. Only half of them usable. A cyclo sign. Ordnance on a door. Johnny went in. Blast mortars. Even a pile of shells for them, contrary to interior storage of ammunition regulations. Well, he came out and grabbed Angus.
Get two of those big flatbed trucks. Get a flying mine platform on each of them. Put a mortar and ammunition on each of the flying platforms. Pile those tarps and wads on the front of the flatbeds for armor. Put one of the rigs outside. Put the other one just inside the door of the hangar.
Yes, there was fuel. he told Sir Robert to get him 4 men and a driver for each of the rigs, and to dispatch one of the rigs as soon as made up to tail the convoy.
That rig?
Said Sir Robert.
They can fly the mine platform off the truck and lay a mortar barrage down. They can block the road by blasting trees across it. Get the convoy tailed, not too close, and if they turn back, block their way.
And if it doesn't work and they get chased back here?
The other rig inside the hangar door can be taken out to help defend the place. Put another 4 men and a driver with it. I'll be taking it when we return here from a visit to the Brigantes.
You'll be chasing the convoy too,
said Sir Robert, adding with sarcasm.
Ranked among the best planned and most carefully drilled operations of history, this one is undoubtedly the very finest.
He went off to get it handled, muttering about a flatbed handling tanks. A Scot came racing up.
Johnny, sir, I think you'd better come down to the third level.
He looked ashen. Johnny limped with difficulty down the next stairway. He was not at all prepared for what they had found. It was a big room they apparently used for shooting practice, a sort of indoor range. Some Russians were standing around something on the floor, looking at it with varied expressions of distaste and disapproval. The Scot directing him stopped, mutely pointing down. In the middle of a veritable lake of congealed blood lay what must have been 2 old women. It was hard to tell from the scraps, but strands of gray hair, brown skin, and ripped clothing lay with scattered bone chips in 2 mounds. The mangled messes and some spent blast gun cases told their story. Several cyclos had stood here, and bit by bit, inch by inch, with hundreds of carefully non-lethal shots, had carved 2 women apart. What a hellish bedlam of shots and screams and laughter this place must have been just a few hours ago. Dr. McKendrick, summoned by someone else, came in. He stopped, avoiding standing in the blood.
Impossible to tell from temperature. Not enough left to check. Maybe 4 hours from the coagulation. Women, 40, 50 years old, worn out by hard work.
They carved their limbs off inch by inch and shot by shot.
He stood up and confronted Johnny.
Why do cyclos do that?
It gives them pleasure. They think it's delicious. The pain and agony.
Johnny looked at McKendrick.
It's about the only time they feel joy.
The doctor's face set.
I feel much better about autopsies on cyclos.
A Russian had been moving something with a stick he had found.
Hold it,
said Johnny. He stepped around the blood pool and picked the object up. Robert the Fox had come in. He halted in shock. The object that was being held up was a tam-o'-shanter. The bonnet of a Scot. No body of a Scot. Just a tam-o'-shanter. Fairly new. The kind the coordinators wore.